You know, we're taking a look at some of the iconic symbols that are a part of the Christmas story. And, you know, they're a great modern classic right there. And there's something that's in common with this idea of going out in a field and getting a Christmas tree. There's something significant that happens in the field. There's something significant that happens with the urgency that we see right here in this dad and son who choose to go after their kid brother, Alf. And what takes place in the field with the shepherds over 2,000 years ago. So I want to explore that today. Before we do, let's pray. God, I thank you for the original Christmas story. We've taken a look at a couple of the modern day stories, and God, as we look at this original story today, I'm going to ask that you would help us to see the significance of what took place in this field, the significance of what took place with these shepherds, and help us to see that we have a lot in common with them. And God, help us to see how many of us, we probably want to have more in common with them. And so God, I'm going to ask that you would help my words to be clear, help them to be accurate as well as articulate. And God, I just ask that in some way you would transport us back 2,000 and some years ago so we get a glimpse of what took place. Pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, you know, this whole idea of being transported back, as I just prayed right there, 2,000 years ago, I don't know if we can fully do that, but, you know, it's interesting because this time of year, if you subscribe to Newsweek or Time Magazine, you're probably in the next few weeks going to see one of those publications kind of run a story on the validity of Jesus and his birth. Oftentimes, Jesus gets a lot of free press this time of year. And you know, they talk to the same skeptics, they talk to the same researchers, they talk to some of the same theologians, you know, and they're all kind of saying the same thing. They're asking, you know, questions about whether this event really took place. Did it take place the way we understand that it took place? How valid is a virgin birth? I mean, all these different things around that. And, you know, as we hear these things, I mean, there's always things that kind of bother us. I mean, if you believe in the whole event of Christmas, if you don't believe in the event of Christmas, there's things that kind of just make us unsettled. In fact, here's one thing that Newsweek said a few years ago. They said, no man, a man with no human father, a king who died a criminal's death, a guy who assures us of everlasting life in a world to come while the world he made is consumed by war and strife. Christianity is a religion of perplexing contradictions. To live an examined faith, believers have to acknowledge those complexities and engage them, however frustrating that may be. And you know, as I think about that, I think there's a lot of truth right there. I mean, a lot of what we think Christmas is or what we think God is, He isn't. It isn't. I mean, this whole idea of Christmas, you know, so many times we make it more than what it is. And we have all these empty hopes and dreams at the end of the season. And at the same time, what we're doing through this series is we're kind of exploring this through line, these little flickers of hope that we find in the original Christmas story. In these very inanimate objects, these inanimate places. And in some unique way, they actually give us a hope that things could be different. They give us a glimpse of a different reality. And so this morning, before we go on, I want to take a look. This article in Newsweek was fascinating. In fact, they had this image right here. Have you ever played the game, What's Wrong With This Picture? Anybody ever like playing that game with your kids when you're a kid? Look at this picture. Let's play it right now. It's a lot of fun. All right? What's wrong with this picture right here? For instance, take a look right here. You know, let's focus on Mary for a moment. Mary's the one in the upper left right there. You know, Mary was more like 13, not 45-ish or whatever she looks like right here. I mean, this artist's rendering is not exactly real accurate in terms of what things must have been like. Maybe you see some other things there. If you do, just lean over to a neighbor, whisper to him, tell him what you might see there. Focus on Mary again. I mean, look at Mary. Mary was most likely not that pasty white. All right, Mary did not grow up in the United States of America, contrary to what some of you believe. All right, Mary was Middle Eastern. I mean, Mary probably wasn't white at all. I mean, she grew up in a Middle Eastern culture. And so we often, again, get a picture that's not real authentic with who she really was. If you look at the landscape back there, you know, notice there's like some Baroque or maybe Victorian architecture in the background. I'm not sure which one it is. I flunked that part of class. But, you know, this was a Middle Eastern culture right here. Again, kind of, you know, we like to make this into a very picturesque view right here. And Mary, if you notice, she's got a book on her stand right there. Just to kind of an update, this was before Gutenberg. All right, so the printing press had not been invented. Mary was a peasant. All right, Mary's a peasant. Peasants didn't have great antiquity. She didn't have a copy of the scriptures, most likely, and yet we like to think she was always reading these. I mean, there are all kinds of ways we look at these painted scenes, these artist renderings of what Christmas may have been like. We see things, and we like to make them about us. We like to make them believe what we want them to be. And, you know, I don't know that using artist renderings at the core is bad, even if they don't fully represent the story. And yet, today, you know, I want to kind of say, you know, am I interested in just making Christmas what I want it to be, or am I really interested in discovering the core of what this was about? Maybe something more than just a feel-good story or something that makes me right in the story. And so today, as we look at the field, I want us to ask the question, what's God saying here? I mean, why does God tell us this? Why does He talk about this field? And what do the shepherds have to do with this whole deal? And so what's fascinating about this story is that God works on both ends of the continuum right here. If you were with us last week, we took a look at the star and the significance of the star that rose in the east. And Julie Buchtenkirk was teaching for us last weekend, who's a member of our teaching team here at Cross Point. I don't know if Julie's in the room, but Julie, thank you for teaching last weekend. If you were here, I know you were blessed by that. You know, she carried it and hit this big subject of, you know, the star was significant because it spoke to a whole people group that that were not interested in tracking with God. I mean, it spoke to these intellects, it spoke to these astrologers. The fact that the star rose and these people who studied the stars and astrology noticed this thing, it actually took a whole group of people who were not interested in God and caused them begin this trek toward the manger. And today we're going to look at the other end of that continuum. We're going to look at the shepherds. We're going to look at, and this is what God does. I mean, God has this way of speaking to both ends of the economic spectrum, of the entire social strata. I mean, God engages everyone in this story. And so today we're going to take a look at the grunt laborers, the shepherds. You know, the shepherds were like the lowest of the lows. All right, I mean, shepherds were like day laborers. These were manual laborers. These were people who, in some way, shape, or form, had lost their family land. They had to go out and hire themselves out just to put food on the table. And there's nothing wrong with working hard, being a day laborer. But in this case, shepherds were often people without honor. Shepherds were not trustworthy individuals. They were actually thieves. They would often steal the very thing that they were entrusted to care for. So often, they would steal the sheep that people had entrusted for them to care for. They were illiterate. They were uneducated. They couldn't even testify in the court of law. I mean, their word could not be trusted. And so as we take a look at this, you know, there's something significant that takes place, because while they're all of these things, the unique thing is that for some reason, God calls on them. And he gives them this unique experience, the lowest of a low. He reveals a sign to them. And I think this is interesting to me because, you know what we like to do? We like to be with the highest of the high, right? I mean, we always like to be hanging around somebody who's, you know, one socioeconomic, strata ahead of us. We like to hang with people that are one popularity band in front of us. I mean, we don't like to hang with the people that are quote unquote lower than we are. And this is where God shows up. And he gives the shepherds this incredible experience, and he draws them into the story. So let's take a look in Luke chapter 2. If you have a Bible with you, you can look there. It's interesting because, as I think about this, I think back when I was in college, I had a friend who actually offered me a job. I took it, and I worked as a day laborer. I was called what they call dumb labor. All right, I worked on a construction site, literally pulling in IT cable. I worked for an IT company pulling cable. I was a cable puller. Nothing glamorous. I was the lowest of the low. I stood up on a ladder at the end of a conduit and just tug a ward all day on a piece of cable until this thing was, filled hospitals and schools. And I remember the calluses on my hands. I remember the soreness every day going home. And I think this is what the shepherds, this is what the grunts experienced. Nobody honored them. Nobody gave them any time except for God. So here's how the story begins. Verse 9. It says, "The angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people." So a couple key words right here. We see the word terrified. We see the phrase, don't be afraid. You know, the angel shows up to the shepherds. Man, they're terrified. I mean, a couple things we begin to get a glimpse of here when we look at the original story. The first, that there is a level of being terrified. I mean, there's this sense of awe that overcomes us when we experience God in this way. We become overwhelmed. Let's go back to that picture for just a moment. Let's play What's Wrong with This Picture, because it's lots of fun, right? It's a great game. So take a look at the angel right there, all right? Take a look at that angel. Let me just ask this a question. Would you be terrified if that angel showed up on your doorstep today? I mean, it's like the Gerber baby with the wig on right here, right? I mean, we have this way of making angels into these little baby faced, red cheeked, toting harps around and, singing love songs and, shooting arrows and putting people in love and playing set up matchmaker. I mean, this is our picture of angels, and yet, this isn't what the scripture reveals angels as to us. I mean, this is not angels. I mean, angels, this is like a gentle little angel. I don't think anybody's in awe or terrified over this angel right here. Another picture we have, remember that show, like Cheesed by an Angel? Touched by an Angel, that's what it was called. Remember Touched by an Angel? I'm not even going to ask you to raise your hand if you like the show. I know it was a wholesome show, right? There's like no cussing in it or anything. It's probably better than Cross Point. So, here's the deal, though. You know, if you want to understand angels, don't go back and watch the reruns. I think all I remember about that show, my grandmother used to watch it, was always feel good. It was always warm and fuzzy at the end. You know, this is not angels. You know, we sang a song this morning. We sing these songs, you know. We sang this song called Hark the Herald Angels Sing, right? You know, we sing that song and we have these glimpses of angels singing. And it's one of those places where art does us a bit of a disservice. I mean, it's one of those places where, you know, I don't think it's bad art. I don't think it's bad to use things that aren't necessarily a part of the original story. But here's the deal on that. Angels never sang in the story, all right? Angels never sang, all right? Angels, in fact, as far as I'm aware, they didn't have harps either, all right? They didn't have harps in the scriptures. In fact, there's only two places in all of the Bible, at least to my awareness, that we actually see the angels singing. The first is very, very early on in what was known as the Great Rebellion. There's this great rebellion. I don't know if you knew there was a great rebellion. There's this great rebellion, and this is where, Lucifer, Satan, little Nicky, however you see him as, this is where, you know, basically he's in heaven. He's one of the angels, and there's this great rebellion. The angels are singing, and all of a sudden there's this great rebellion. About a third of the angels fall from heaven, including little Nicky. And they go into this place that's disconnected apart from God. And then that's where they start messing with us down here. That's where they begin getting involved with Adam and Eve. The angels are singing before that took place. The other place was at the other end of the scriptures in Revelation, the very last book of the Bible. We see the angels singing. And this is at a point when everything's, you know, Revelations is kind of like a picture of the forward look of what the world is going to be like when things are restored back to the way they're supposed to be. And after that takes place, we see that angels are singing right there. In between these two things, the angels are not singing. You know why they're not singing? Because they're at war. They're at war. They're in a battle. I mean, they're not toting harps. They're toting broadswords. They're showing up as warriors on the battlefield. I mean, angels are armed entities. That's why everybody's afraid when they show up. I mean, you know, when angels show up, man, you get freaked out. I mean, Mary gets freaked out. The shepherds, I mean, these are burly dudes. These are not like little 13-year-old boys. These are like wrestling wolves and tigers and bears, you know, fending off, you know, these wild animals. These are burly dudes. And when one angel shows up, the dude's freaked out. And the angel goes, whoa, I didn't come to thump you. I didn't come to thump you. Just give me a moment. In fact, it was almost like that one angel said to his buddies, he's like, hey, let me go down and handle this on my own. Why don't you guys all stay up here? Let me just go and kind of lay the groundwork. Because, you know, the scripture said it was the angel. Let me go lay the groundwork for this. And then after I kind of lay the groundwork, then you all can come in and we'll do like an Emeril Lagasse and bam, we'll take it to a different level right there. You ever watched Emeril? And bam! And so that's what happens. Take a look. Here's what happens right here. Verse 13. Suddenly a great company of the heavenly hosts appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest heaven, on peace, on earth peace to those and whom his favor rests. You know what word jumps out to me right there? This whole idea right here of the angels being in great company. It's a great company. This means a legion. This means it's an armed force. Let me tell you what this isn't. This is not a choir of angels singing. All right? This is not like a Christmas tree on stage with levels of people acting like angels singing in the Christmas tree. All right, I don't know where we get these pictures of. This is not that. These are angels armed to the hilt, sword in hand, ready to do battle, ready to annihilate. These are the warriors that God has placed on this earth to engage in this cosmic battle. Because you know what? A Savior is coming. A Messiah is coming. And He's coming and He's going to lead this battle. In fact, at one point in the battle, He's actually going to lose His life as a piece of the battle. So, I mean, these guys are armed. They are waging war. And again, I think this is one of the ways that kind of artistic renderings don't necessarily do us justice. I think this is one of the reasons that men, we see, you know, the ratio of men to women in churches is kind of skewed. I think men check out on this deal at times. I mean, you know, I want to speak in generalities for a moment. You know, you don't see women going out and buying paint guns and broadswords after watching Braveheart, right? I mean, maybe some of you do. I don't know. But generally speaking, guys do that, right? Guys do that. And you know, what do we say? We're like, hey, come be an angel. Come be an angel in our Christmas tree. Come sing and be an angel. And guys are like, whippy, why would I do that? That doesn't interest me at all. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons we see, you know, 70% women across America, 30% men in churches. Man, guys, way to go for knocking up the averages here at Crosspoint. Let me give you a hand. I love seeing men engaged here, way over the norm. Probably because we talk about stuff like this. You know, this is a war that's going on. It's a war. And you see, when God arrives, He's not inviting you to be in some Christmas tree choir. He's inviting you to go on mission with Him. He's saying, I want you to be a part of what I'm doing. I want you to go out on the battlefield. And there's times where it's going to be difficult. There's times where it's going to be grunt work. It's going to be intense at times. And this is what's happening right now in the story. The angels are going to the shepherds. And the shepherds, they get it. They're like, hey, you want us to engage in this battle? I mean, we are in. We are all in on this deal. And here's what they say. It says, when the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in a manger. It says they hurried. What did the shepherds do? They hurried. You know, there are certain times, certain seasons in life when hurry is necessary. There's certain times when hurry is a part of our normal routine, and some of you are thinking, man, that's my life right now. I mean, it's Christmas. That's what Christmas is about, right? I mean, we're always hustling and bustling and hurrying. And No. That's like you respond to the over-commercialization of Christmas right there. That has nothing to do with hurrying in a spiritual sense. Right? There's a time to hurry, though. There's a time to respond to a sense of urgency, and it comes upon us from time to time. In fact, maybe you've gone on like a spiritual retreat at one point or another. Maybe you've gone through like a spiritual development seminar. Maybe, I know for many of you, you were here for the Strong Challenge over the last 7-8 weeks. 8 weeks ago, we began the Strong Challenge where we engaged in disciplines. We realized there are certain things that we can do, we can apply to our lives, and when we engage in them, they actually grow us. They take us to new places. You know, we did things like play. We took strategic and intentional times to play 1 week just to remind us that we need a Sabbath. We need time where we're disengaged and reminds us that we're not a machine. It's very healthy physically, spiritually. We did some things in terms of getting quiet and doing some contemplative reflection, spending some time in prayer. And again, these are things that kind of build into us physically and emotionally and spiritually. And yet I've never heard someone talk about the spiritual discipline of hurry, though. I've never heard about that discipline. And yet we see it right here in this story. It says the shepherds, they hurried. You know what they did? It was like they said, hey, right now something needs to get done. We need to get it and get her done right now. That's what they need to do. So we're getting her done. And so they rose up. They realized it wasn't a time to sit back. I mean, you notice the shepherds didn't respond like you and I. You know what you and I would do? We'd be like, can we pause and pray about whether we should do this or not? Yeah, we always take the spiritual card and say, I'm going to pray about this. The shepherds don't do that. They're like, hey, the angels showed up with swords. They're like, these dudes have swords. We just need to, you want us to go? We're on it right now. We're already moving. I mean, they entered this, drop everything and immediately go to Bethlehem. That's what they did. And what's interesting about Bethlehem, by the way, is we actually have a word for Bethlehem. I don't know if you knew that or not. There's actually a word in our vocabulary for Bethlehem. It's the word bedlam. You ever heard the word bedlam? Bedlam actually has connections to Bethlehem. In fact, in Europe, in around the 1500s, there was actually this priory, this kind of monastery, owned by the Catholic Church called St. Mary's of Bethlehem. And during the mid-1500s, that priory actually shut down. It actually closed down. The building got delivered over to the city government. The city was looking for a place to house their insane asylum. So they actually made this priory, this former monastery, an insane asylum, called it St. Mary's of Bethlehem Insane Asylum. And here's the crazy thing. They actually began to charge admission for people to go in there. They would actually charge for people to go in and get entertained. Now, this was way before, like, you know, social rights activists. I mean, this wouldn't fly today. It wouldn't be, I mean, you're going to sit here and you're like, man, that was demented. Here's what they do. They charge admission. People could go in and they could heckle the inmates in this insane asylum for entertainment. They could go in and they just heckle them. They'd do things, you know, they'd yell at them. They'd do things until the inmates were so confused. I mean, picture this. These poor individuals who are dealing with emotional issues, who are dealing with psychological issues, and they have a bunch of strangers paying to come in to heckle them until they come to the point of just losing it, just screaming and going crazy. And it was called entertainment. And so it was out of this cacophony of sound and confusion, this bedlam, that would happen in this priory in Bethlehem in Europe in 1500. And this is actually where we get the word bedlam today. And as you understand that, and you know, maybe we're not so far from Bethlehem as we think. I mean, maybe Bethlehem isn't necessarily a place on the other side of the world. Maybe Bethlehem is something we experience all around us every day. I mean, there's people in my life, I don't know about you, there's people around me experiencing mayhem, experiencing confusion, severe difficulty. I mean, maybe there's things going on us every day where there needs to be a severe sense of urgency, a hurry. And I'm not talking about the hurry that comes with the malls, with, you know, making sure we get all our gifts bought. I'm talking about how you're going to be sitting around, you know, in some room somewhere over these next few weeks, sipping eggnog, and you're going to be hanging out with somebody, and maybe that's going to be the very last time you're going to talk with that person. And maybe there's a conversation that you need to have. Maybe that person's getting up in years. Maybe that person isn't up in years, but something tragic's going to happen over the next few weeks. And you just need to hurry and have a conversation. You need to hurry. I don't know what the conversation is. But you probably know what it is. I mean, maybe it's one of those moments where you don't sit back, where you don't wait, where you're like, I need to hurry to have this conversation right now. That's the sense of urgency the shepherds have right there. You know, Julie and I, we went on a trip a few weeks ago. In fact, it was about a week and a half ago. It's something we've done for each of the last 4 or 5 years. We traveled down to Florida for Thanksgiving break, and Christmas kind of came early for us on this. You know, it was one of those times where about 4 or 5 years ago we began to get away for the Thanksgiving holiday with just our immediate family, and found it very refreshing, life-giving. Just really enjoyed some time with our kids, And we've just made that a tradition over the last few years. And so we made plans for this trip. We were kind of, you know, thinking that this was when it was going to happen. It's very sacred time for us, for just our kids, just my wife and I and our 4 kids. And something happened about 2.5, 3 months ago that kind of began to trump this thing. One of our friends, her name is Crystal, used to work with my wife, actually attended Cross Point early on, like the first 3 or 4 months of when we existed here at Cross Point. And she used to attend here, moved to Florida, a single mom, has a daughter that's 13, that's a childhood schizophrenic. She's living with her parents down in Florida so she can get her feet back on the ground. And about 2.5, 3 months ago, she came down with leukemia. Very unexpected. We got a call from her that, you know, Crystal's in the hospital. She's not doing well. She's been fainting. She's been passing out in the shower. And so, they immediately began treatment. And the first round of treatment, no change in the leukemia. And so we began to feel this sense of urgency. We thought, man, we need to go down there. Now, you know, we realize there's people all around us here that are dealing with difficult things. And we respond as there are needs. But the unique thing about this is we are her spiritual family. I mean, even though she's 1,200 miles away, we're as close to spiritual family as it gets to her. And so we began to say, man, should we bump our trip up? Should we go early? You know, maybe this isn't a time to wait. And then she went through a second round of chemotherapy, a much more intense round. And that began to remove the leukemia cells, however that works in that process. And she actually went into a full remission. And she's right now waiting for a bone marrow transplant. And so we were able to keep our vacation, our time down south during the Thanksgiving week. But you know, there was something that trumped just us spending time as a family. And that was spending time with Crystal. And so 2 different days over the course of that week, Julie went up and spent a significant part of the morning just hanging out with her friend. Just having spiritual conversations, having real life conversations about health, about family, about how are you doing with your kids? How are your aging parents doing in raising these two young teenagers? You know, how are you doing in your faith? Can I pray for you? We had the privilege to take Madison and William, her 2 kids, with us to Disney World for a day, to the MGM Studios. I mean, it was a great day. I tell you what, though, adding 2 extra kids, one with a special need on top of our 4, it was kind of crazy. You know, we just felt like we need to give our family a break. They have season passes, but they hadn't been in months since their mom went into the hospital. It was like Christmas that day. And it was one of those moments that as much as that had become a family tradition for us, man, there was an urgency that needed to trump what we had made that little event into. And as we were driving home, I began to think about Christmas and what's the connection here? And I thought, you know, for many of us, I think so often we make Christmas this nice little event that we want it to be, and we begin to miss the urgency of what this story was all about. Because there's a couple things I know. One of the things I know that over these next couple of weeks, there are going to be people in your life, people who are experiencing mayhem, people who are experiencing difficulty, that over the next few weeks are going to probably be more open to spiritual conversations, more open to God than many other times of the year. I also know that people are more open to God and spiritual conversations when 3 things are taking place in their life. And we talk about these periodically at Cross Point. One is when there's trouble. Whenever somebody in your life is experiencing trouble, often they're more open to spirituality, to God, to having God conversations than in other times of their life. Could be marriage trouble, could be legal trouble, could be trouble with kids. Another factor is whenever people are in tension. Tension could be things are stressful at work, or there's stress in the home for whatever reason. Could be good stress, could be bad stress, could be that we just added a child, a baby just arrived in a home. The third factor is whenever there's transition. Again, it doesn't have to be bad. Could be moving into a new community. Could be moving into a new neighborhood. Could be welcoming, expanding a family. Could be transitions like changing from one job to the next. Could be transitions of losing a relationship. Whatever they are. You know, and what I know is these two things are both going on over these next few weeks. There are many people around us in trouble, tension, and transition. And we're at one of the seasons of the year when people are more open to God and spiritual things than nearly any other time of year. And the question is, what kind of urgency do we have to meet the needs around us? So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take out that connection card that I referred to a few minutes ago. And pull that out and hold it in your hands. Grab a pen next to you. And then also in your weekly, there's a card that looks like this. It says invest and invite on it. I want you to pull this card out as well. And, there are a number of ways over these next few weeks that you can engage in urgently responding to maybe things in your life, but specifically to people around you. And so I want you to hold this card, this Invest Invite card in your hands for just a moment. You know, I always talk about people in mayhem around us, people who maybe, we're concerned about, maybe people in our lives who don't know Christ, who you just hope might experience Christ in a new way this Christmas. Well, I want to ask you to consider praying for them. On the back side, there's three spaces on this card, and we talk about this a couple times at Crosspoint here, about getting people on our hearts where we're just praying for people in our lives who maybe we feel like, man, there's stuff going on in their life that I believe if they can encounter Christ, it might begin to change this. Are there people in your life that you say, man, I want to pray for them that I might either be able to have a conversation or even give them an invite to join us here, for one of our Christmas services, for Christmas Eve services, whatever it might be. Maybe God needs to use you to bring a flicker of hope to their life. And it needs to be an urgency about it. Will you pray for them? Won't you, if people are coming to mind, just start writing their names down. I already know who my three are. I've began praying for them. And we're going to give you some cool tools over the next few weeks, some cool invite tools for you to invite them to Christmas Eve and those kinds of things, just to help you be able to pass the word on. But this week, I just want to say, will you begin to pray for them? You know, another thing that's going on around here that we do every year is this whole spread some cheer deal. And, and this is really cool because, we live in a community where there are very few needs. And yet, in the greater Indianapolis area, there are needs all over. There are many, many families that are not going to have a Christmas meal on their table. And so, we feel like that's something we need to address. And so, in your weekly, you have a shopping list. It looks like this. Thank you. And it looks like this. It says, spread some cheer. And over the next few weeks, we are preparing meal boxes. They're this size. And these boxes are located right outside as you get ready to walk out. They're on a big cart. And we had 100 of these when we began. I believe there's about 55 left. And we're providing families, up to 100 meals for families in the greater Indianapolis community. We're going to be distributing these through our partnership with IPS School 96 on the northwest side of Indianapolis, as well as through one of the schools right here in Hamilton Southeastern up at Durban Elementary. There's about 20, 25 families that these meals will be going to, and it will literally put a meal on their table for Christmas in a place where otherwise they wouldn't have anything. I mean, these are going to feed about 12 to 1,400 people over the course of the Christmas season. A great way. This isn't where you sit and say, man, let me pray about whether I can do that. This is where you're like, let me see if I can get her done. Let me see if I can take a box. And you might look at this list and say, man, that's a lot of food. I don't know if I can afford this. Well, partner up with somebody. Grab a partner and split the list up. On December 18th, these boxes all need to come back here. And it's one of the greatest days of the year around here. We're going to have a big truck and a trailer out front. These boxes are going to get loaded up. They're going to be shipped off that day directly into homes on the afternoon of the 18th. And so the love just flows through this place on that box return Sunday. The other thing that we're kicking off today is there's something called a giving tree out in the lobby. And so maybe when you came in, you saw a Christmas tree. And I know a lot of these got took first hour, but you'll find these ornaments on the tree. There's still a few left. We're supporting some kids through one of the schools up in Noblesville that, again, may not have a Christmas this year. And so we've got some items, about 100 items out there that you can buy and provide Christmas to some kids who are literally below the poverty level right here in our community. And these need to be returned as well on December 18th. So when you're shopping for your kids, take one of these, return it, attach the tag to it when it comes back, and put it back under the tree. I mean, it's just some of the ways that, when we begin to get attuned to what's going on, the mayhem, the madness around us, that we can say, okay, what do I urgently need to do right now? So take a moment on the back of that card and say, okay, here's my next step today. Here's what I'm going to begin to get on, to get after today. And maybe it's having a conversation with somebody. Maybe that's the first and foremost. And as you're marking that, you know, this just reminds me back when I was in high school. I played basketball through all through my high school years. I was actually the captain of my basketball team my senior year. And one of my roles as captain was to start practices at 3:05 every day. We got out of school at 3:00. My role was to help get the team started in drills. Our coach, that last year I was in school, he had a class 6 hour. He wasn't able to come directly to the gym, so he'd show up about 10 minutes after we got started. And you know, there was always something unique that happened. You could usually hear him coming toward the gym. Sometimes he was yelling. Sometimes he's like, "Hey, I don't hear the balls bouncing. Get it moving." I mean, he was yelling before he got in the room. Other times he wouldn't say a word, and yet you could hear in the briskness of his gait, you could hear him coming. And that's kind of how it is with God. When the steps of the coach come near, it's like you begin to pick up the pace. I mean, as soon as we heard coach coming around that corner, I mean, the pace of those drills just immediately started snapping. And that's what happens when we get around God. I mean, when we get around the footsteps of God, it's like you hear that whisper, you sense His presence, you see what's going on, and you just naturally begin to pick up the pace. That's what the shepherds did. They got a sense of urgency. And they were in that field, and something happened that was totally unexpected for them. Here's what it says in verse 20. It says, "The shepherds returned glorifying and praising God for all the things they heard and seen, which were just as they had been told." They worshiped based on what they heard and what they had seen. Heard and seen. They said, "Hey, based on what we've just seen, we're going to go," and they began to worship. In fact, this is the third thing that happens. We begin to reflect back to God who He is. It's what happens when we see and hear God. We reflect back to God. It's called worship. That's what worship is. Sometimes we think worship is based on our beliefs. We think it's based on what I align in my head based on what I believe. It's not. It's not based on belief. I mean, I believe this platform is going to hold me up until I get off of it, but I don't bow down and worship this platform. I worship based on what I see and what I hear. Worship is simply kind of reflecting back thanksgiving to God, saying, "God, I mean, You are so great for just coming through right here." And the shepherds, man, that's what they did. There's a sense of urgency based on what they saw. They got urgent. They got on it. They got her done. And it wasn't a one-time hit. I mean, it kept going. They couldn't get away. They kept this sense of urgency. They couldn't stop worshiping. They couldn't stop talking about God. God, I'm praying right now that you would build a sense of urgency into us right now. God, that You would just help us to gain a sense of movement and momentum in these next moments, God, as we look around and as we think about people in our lives who are in bedlam. God, I just ask that You would just point us, and You would give us a sense, and You would give us an urging, and God, that we would respond.